We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey, this is Antonio Davis, and you're listening to Setting the Pace on Pacers Podcast.
Spinning is Sabonis.
Walking gets around. Yeah!
Plumford skies high for the jam.
Mentor.
Boom! Miles Turner bringing that smoke.
Warren lets it fly.
Yes! T.J. Warren!
Setting the pace, and I think that's terrific.
Pacer Nation, what's going on? Welcome back to another episode of Setting the Pace. I'm your host, Alex Golden, and joined today by my lovely co-host, Michael J. Facci. Facci, what's going on, brother?
Ooh, nothing much. And guys, we have a treat for you today, a little bit of a blast from the past, from the glory days when the Pacers were, when they were winning. And that's Antonio Davis will be joining us today.
Absolutely. So you can hear that conversation with me, Facci, and Antonio Davis in the second segment of today's podcast. I'm going to be hopping on with Tony East from Locked On Pacers to do a one-on-one conversation with him. Facci will not be able to join me for that one, but definitely wanted to have Facci on for the Antonio Davis conversation because Antonio Davis is a beloved Pacer, and I think a lot of fans are going to like this, Facci.
I'm looking forward to it, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it too.
Absolutely. So let's get out of the way and get to our show. We'll talk to y'all next week.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, everybody? Joining me right now from Locked On Pacers is Tony East. Tony, what's going on, man?
Excited to be chatting, man. This is when the trade deadline sniffs, you know, the 2-week smell, you can see it coming, and the games are returning soon and the All-Star breaks over. Everybody just gets in the zone to just talk about basketball. And I'm in that zone right now, so I'm excited.
I feel the same way, but what's so weird is we still have like half the season left, and it's not just like one-third of the season, so it's kind of throwing me for a loop seeing how many games
I know. Usually the All-Star break is like, and it's so weird because like you have no idea what the rank of the league is this time around the All-Star break, right? Like everybody's still kind of bunched up because it's only halfway through, whereas it's normally two-thirds and you kind of know who's bad and who's good. It's I kind of like this better.
Yeah, it's more interesting, that's for sure. The second half is more interesting. And, you know, the Pacers, I got to jump right into it. Obviously, they've just not been playing good basketball over the last couple of weeks. They've had some wins here and there, but it's just been sprinkled in between four-game losing streaks. And they've got a gauntlet of a schedule here coming up in March. And I know that you've been talking about it a lot on your pod, but I want to look back at some of the past couple of weeks.
You know, what do you think has been some of the major struggles for this team in the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, they're sort of too predictable almost. And I think that the way you see that manifested the most, and this is something I've been asking players a lot about in you know, media and stuff, is like they don't go on runs ever, right? The other team goes on about once a game, I would say. The Pacers' opponent goes on like a 10-15-0 run, and the Pacers just, they can battle back and forth, but they always have one slumping run because, and Caitlin Cooper ironically just wrote about this, but they're getting more predictable, and that teams kind of know their sets and they haven't really evolved them yet. And some of that's that they don't have guys who are really creative and good creators. You know, we know that without Karis and TJ, they're limited in their creators. So they're kind of limited to transition and sets to really get awesome shots. And they're having a lot of trouble doing that recently, right? So they can't go on a sustained run to put teams away. I think there are only two memorable runs since, let's think back. Since they beat the Pistons, their only two memorable runs in my head are the very beginning of the Knicks game and the very beginning of the Celtics game, right? Like, those are the only two that even stand out to me. So that combined with they're just kind of inconsistent on defense, right? They throw a lot of junk defenses in there. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And that inconsistency is a factor in the runs too. But they're just, they don't have the creators to be creative on offense. Those two words are too similar. And they're inconsistent on defense, so that you put it together, and it's really hard to like put together a sustained run of success. Their longest win streak in all of February was what, two games, and it was the Pistons and Hawks. Like, they're definitely struggling right now.
No, there's no doubt about it, and it's really hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel because, quite frankly, once you trade Oladipo, everything just kind of changed. And you know, they had a good week there, but most of that came when Edmund Sumner was playing, and now he's slowly starting to get back in the rotation. And I don't necessarily think he's the reason for, you know, why they're losing so much or winning so much, whatever. But I think that he could be a huge part of this team's success if he's actually given consistent minutes in the rotation. But, you know, why do you think he's not been consistently in the rotation, even though every time he's played, it's been positive?
If I knew the answer to that, I would have said it many times in the last couple months, because I've been harping on him playing for multiple seasons. I think most people know that I'm a big fan of his game.
Right, right.
And it's funny this year because, you know, the reasons you wouldn't play him, in theory, the guys right in front of him, Jeremy Lamb, it's because Jeremy Lamb kicks ass on offense. And like, yeah, he's awesome at that. So you play him. And Aaron Holiday's young and growing and is pretty good on defense. So you play them and let them do their thing. But Sumner is probably better than Aaron Holiday on defense and better than Jeremy Lamb on offense. He's not like individually maybe a more complete package than either of those guys necessarily. But recently he has been. And and so I think he's been better than both. I wrote about that I think he should play over both, and he has been now. Aaron Holiday might just be out of the rotation completely. I think he played 4.5 minutes in their game against the Nuggets before the break.
Mm-hmm. And that was in the fourth quarter, right?
I can't remember.
Because I felt like he came in late. Was that when
I think it was the fourth quarter, actually.
Okay.
No, he played 9 minutes against the Nuggets. Was it the Cavs he only played 4 minutes? Because McConnell and Sumner were amazing in that game. Yeah, it was the Cavs. He played 4.5 minutes. So, yeah, his spot in the rotation is really small, which I think that that's okay if they're not totally benching him. That makes a lot of sense. But I don't know why they didn't start playing Sumner earlier. I mean, he's just so smooth in transition. He can defend lots of guys. He actually can shoot now, right? He's a really good shooter in the G League. I would always ask him about how the G League helped him, and he'd talk about shooting confidence. So he's actually hitting the three right now. I don't know how long that'll last. Maybe it's permanent because he's shown he could do it in the minors before. So if that sticks, I mean, there's literally no reason not to play him. I feel like he has to be in the rotation the rest of the year.
Yeah, and so I kind of went on a bit of a limb here, and I was like, I like what Doug McDermott does with the starters, but I also like how Edmund Sumner's defense is and how he can get in passing lanes and just the change of pace that he has. I mean, would you be opposed to maybe putting Doug back on the bench and starting Edmund Sumner in his spot?
I've seen that take pop up a few times. I think that makes some sense. I'm kind of thinking as I talk here. The trouble for me with changing the starters is I kind of think Justin Holiday has been way better than McDermott this year, but I kind of think I'd rather move Justin to the bench than Doug if I had to make that choice. Because, and me and Adam just talked about this, is one, the net rating with Justin Holiday and Aaron Holiday together on the floor is really good this year, actually. It's one of the few lineups that Aaron actually clicks in, and I think there's two reasons for that. The family thing is really small, but it's a small benefit to both of them, right? They're actually pretty good at playing together. And two, their skills are just natural fits. And I think setting up Aaron Holiday for success is good given his struggles this year. McConnell's good with anybody. Jeremy Lamb's the same with everybody, right? So you're not changing either of those guys, but you are elevating Aaron Holiday by playing him with Justin with the second unit. And two, McDermott is best with Sabonis. So by keeping McDermott starting, you have paired him with the player that he is the most effective with. So I think if I wanted to start Sumner, I would put him in for Justin Holliday. You can still play Justin Holliday 38 minutes and have him close games, but then I think you're you might be improving the starter slightly while also keeping your bench success at a high level and still getting Sumner the minutes he requires. That's what I would try to do if I was going to start it, but I don't think I would. I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing there is this McDermott and Sabonis pairing. I mean, McDermott has just not been as good when he's not out on the floor with Sabonis. It's just obvious. And
well, if he could shoot, that wouldn't matter this year, but he can't shoot this year.
I do not understand him. I was laughing because I think Zach Lowe brought it up on his podcast, like the Pacers could be both buyers and sellers, and he brought in McDermott and McConnell. And then when we had Jay Michael on Monday, he actually said there's zero interest in McConnell. There's been no calls for him, basically. But there's been, you know, interest in McDermott, and somebody said that they could add shooting to their team. And I'm like, have you seen McDermott play this year? His numbers have been awful.
Adding shooting is just making McDermott remember how to do it.
Seriously. I mean, if he could knock down threes on a consistent rate, I think there's maybe a couple games we could have won that we lost. But, you know, Aaron Holliday, this is a guy that I think a lot of Pacer fans had high hopes for. But it's just been really disappointing, and I never thought that I'd see the light at the end of the tunnel with Aaron Holliday being worse under Bjorkren than he has been under McMillan, especially because I felt like he had the short leash with McMillan for a little bit, and then last year was a starter and played pretty well. I mean, what do you think the biggest difference is? Is it just the system, or what's going on with him?
I wish I had a good answer for that. A lot of people really, when that question would come up this offseason, right? A lot of similar topics were talked about amongst every Pacers coverage person this offseason. That was a common one. Who's going to be the player who improves the most with this coaching search? A lot of people said Turner. A lot of people said McDermott. But like a lot of the subtle answer was Aaron Holliday, right? He's not going to have the leash problem anymore. His skills match up with the things Bjorkren says he wants to do. And to Bjorkren's credit, he's done the things he says he wants to do, right? His defense is disruptive. There's more off-ball movement. The ball moves fast on offense. You know, there's no stagnation, even if it's predictable. That's it, you know what I mean? It's moving and stuff like that. So Aaron is just not fitting in. And it's kind of strange to me that that's happened. Some of it is just his, you know, he was a better three-point shooter last year. If he was shooting the same level from three he was last year, he'd be really close to the same stats, basically. But the other thing, and this is something that I talked about a lot with Aaron last year that I thought was his biggest improvement from year one to two, is he got a lot better passing, and he has totally taken that step back this year. When he comes in the game, he looks to shoot a lot more for reasons I don't quite know. He's not playing point guard as much, right? He plays with McConnell a lot, so he's off the ball. So he's not looking to pass as much. That balance is kind of gone for him, and I think that that means he takes tougher shots, which really hurts his shooting percentage, hurts his effectiveness, hurts the offense in general. And I don't think Bjorkren has a problem with the shots he's taking, and Aaron, to his credit, recently has – you know, figured out that little lefty floater thing. He's got that going for him. His shooting percentage has gone up, but he doesn't balance it enough anymore. He's just all shoot all the time, and he's not hitting enough for that to be an effective player. So I think if it is coaching that's causing him to struggle, it's that Bjorkren just tells him to go out there and shoot. And if it's not coaching and it's an Aaron Holliday thing, then he needs to reel it back in and remember what he was doing so well last year, which was maybe not leading the bench unit. That's a little extreme, especially because he played with McConnell, but being more of a floor general who is helping the offense in more ways than just scoring.
Yeah, and I think a lot of fans thought that McConnell might take the back seat to Aaron Holliday as the backup point guard for this Pacers team. And it's funny because
remember he started, like, that happened at first.
Yeah, and I mean, what's interesting too is, I mean, every time that he checks in the game, Quinn Buckner's like, he's been struggling, but he's a scorer. He's just got to get out there and score the basketball. And, you know, I think Aaron does have some scoring ability. There's no doubt about it. I think he can be a microwave type of player, but it's just too inconsistent. And honestly, it's like, it's so frustrating. And then you got a guy like Edmund Sumner, who's been playing better than him. And the Pacers have a lot of good guards this year. Like, McConnell has been unbelievable this season. He's honestly been almost attached to the hip for Bjorkren, because like Bjorkren loves him. I just laugh at how much he's playing him. And like the game against the Knicks where he had 46 minutes, just crazy ridiculous to me. And not even the minutes conversation, but just how much he loves him. But I think McConnell's earned it. And I think McConnell's probably having his best year in a long time. Maybe ever.
Yeah. I want to get to McConnell in a second, but I have a thought about Aaron Holliday that I've thought about before, but I never got to articulate, and I'm going to do it now, 'cause I just remembered while we're talking. A career arc goal for Aaron Holliday, and I cannot believe I'm about to say this because I used to absolutely rip the player I'm about to say. A good career arc for Aaron Holliday right now would be Terry Rozier, because with Boston, he had that one really awesome playoff series where he got like the scary Terry moniker and all that. But he was mostly pretty bad in the regular season, and he shot terrible. You know, he had the good a good 3-point shooting season where he averaged over 10 points a game, but mostly was just a bad shooter, not looking to pass. Gets to Charlotte, and James Borrego says, "I'm using this guy off ball, right? I don't, he's going to pass a little bit. He'll have the ball a lot because he's going to play a lot, but he's going to be a movement shooter for me." And now Rozier is good and effective. He's shooting over 40% from 3 2 years in a row. He's actually efficient, 18 points per game last year, over 20 this year. And I'm not saying that's the role change necessarily that Aaron needs, but he needs the situation to set up for him to have that Rozier-like moment where something happens and they go, okay, this is what your best role is. We're going to put you in this situation every game. And that's the career arc for him where he figures that out and gets the shots that he is good at and not just, here's the ball, go to your stuff. McConnell is having a killer year. You're absolutely right. I think the Bjorkgren style is just perfect for him. Try to get paint touches when you have the ball in your hands to make the defense move around. Attack the ball like crazy on defense. McConnell did that stuff under McMillan. So he is just in the perfect situation. I can't believe no one considered him for the perfect improvement player under Bjorkgren in the offseason.
Yeah, it was funny when we had Kevin Pritchard on. I asked him that question, who's been the most impressive to you? And the first person he brought up was Jeremy Lamb. I don't know if he'd still say that a couple weeks later after, you know, some of the struggles he had. But I think it was more so just he was impressed with how quick he's come back from that injury.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I think that was more so – and he had a really good start to the season. Like, the first, like, week or so that he was back, he played pretty well, I thought. And I think that's why Bjorkman started him. But as a starter, he was just pitiful. And just – I don't know. His defense is probably the worst I've seen in a long time from a wing player in the NBA. But I don't want to get too much on that. I want to keep with our conversation of young players. And the last, you know, notable young player that we need to talk about is Goga Bitadze. And, of course, it's been a small sample size this year, but what have been your overall thoughts on Goga this season, and what do you think his future looks like on this team?
Well, he played bad against the Clippers 2 months ago, so they should just trade him, right? That's how this works.
Yeah, he's a bust, right?
That was the absolute dumbest night, I think, of, like I try to read every reply. I really do. Like, get the pulse of the team, see what people think of players. Like, how can I work this into the way I watch the player? But that game, that Clippers game, They got smoked, like, whatever. Everybody's going to be mad. But the Goga takes were so bad. Like, I could not believe this. People are like, oh, my gosh, Bjorkgren needs to play Goga. He needs to play this young guy, that young guy. And then Goga plays, and everyone's like, no, never mind. I was like, wait a minute. What? Why does one game? Anyway, Goga's been interesting. His defensive confidence looks way better this year than his rookie year. He's getting a lot better. He's not still not good at this, but he's a lot better at the spacing, especially when he has to do drop coverage, defend two-on-ones, just be pressuring the ball, right? The stuff that Bjorkgren asks his guys to do. He's a lot better at that. He got caught in no man's land so much last year. Right? I think he played against the Lakers, not in the bubble, the game they played in Banker's Life. And I remember Dwight Howard just dunking, like, all over him many times. Yeah. So he's gotten better at that kind of stuff. His spacing on offense is still a little awkward, but his screening's a little better. But he's definitely been up and down. You know, he has some games where he looks – more lost than others. I think that's just a pace of the game thing when I watch it. You know, he's still learning the speed of the NBA game. So when the game's moving a little slower in general, he can kind of understand where he needs to be or who he needs to be watching out for to stop. And when it's going up and down real quick, he gets lost in the shuffle sometimes and ends up, you know, forcing up a three or whatever. But really, he's not finishing his shots. And that's a big thing for him, right? Because he was supposed to be a shooter. That's not true. I don't want to ever tab a 7 foot tall man as a shooter coming into the league, but you know, he was tabbed as a better finisher than he has been. And I think if he can just have a little better touch or hit a few more threes, his three ball has been awful.
Yeah.
I think my outlook on him would be a lot better because the defensive instincts are there. And I think he understands where he's supposed to stand. Like, he reads the game pretty well. So I think he's already close to that backup level, but if he can't finish anything, then he'll never get there. So I think if he just could add a little more consistency, putting the ball in the basket, the objective of the game, then I think I'd be a lot higher on him. But he's had a good year, just an up and down year.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm trying to figure out, because like it's so hard to figure out if they're going to stay with the Turbonus duo. And if they do, what does that mean for Goga? Like, cool, he's a third string center, but like really he needs playing time to develop and show what he can really be. But if you're going to keep those two guys and you know that it's better to just play them, you know, solo minutes, I'm not sure what his future is. And that to me is why, like, if you don't get his value up, then his trade value is not worth anything. But at the same time, if you're not playing him, then he's never going to really develop into a player that you really would consider to put in your rotation on a regular basis. So I just feel like they've got to figure out a way to find him minutes just for one of those two reasons.
I agree. Yeah, I definitely agree with all that. And he's an interesting case of his role because they picked him so high. Not so high, like 18th isn't.
Well, they picked him over Brandon Clark.
Yeah, gosh. The worst part about that draft is like all the guys I thought would be good have turned out to be good. So I just
imagine if we had OG Anunoby and Brandon Clark on this team instead of TJ Leaf and Goga Bitadze.
I know. Gosh. Like with Jalen Brunson, like I forgive a lot of teams. He went in the second round. Like literally every team passed on him, right? Like I was really high on him, but I don't feel as bad about teams that whiffed there. But like, yeah, OG and Brandon Clark and Grant Williams has struggled a little bit this year. But those kind of guys that I thought it was so obvious they'd be good. And then they actually turned out good. Talon Horton Tucker, I wrote a whole thing about him too. Like,
oh, I remember.
Oh, my heart, man. I hate when that happens. Yeah, with Goga, it's interesting because that was the takes around he was picked. The second he was picked, this conversation we're having started is like, okay, either a center's getting traded and he'll play or he is a trade piece. And I think that that's going to come to a head kind of soon. I mean, maybe not this deadline, actually almost certainly not this deadline, but you know, if they flame out in the playoffs this year, they might have to say, okay, we're either moving one of our centers or we're using Gogar Aaron or whatever as one of our bigger chips to get a better fitting player. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll come to a head soon, but yeah, that's definitely a problem. They're kind of stuck in the middle of this year's how they get all three of them minutes. I again, the solution should be Sabonis plays whatever four less minutes and 36 and a half is a lot. Those go to Goga. That's a little bit of help. Sam with Turner, he plays two less minutes. And 6 minutes sounds like nothing, but like that's a full stint, right? Like in the second quarter. And if he doesn't play in the second half, like whatever. You got him a little bit of time out there to play with NBA players. Like that has some value. So I think that's what they should do. Mm-hmm. But I get why they're not, especially because they're 16 and 19 and they need to try to win every game at this point.
Right. And I just want to touch on this real quick. I know there's been a lot of conversation about the amount of minutes these guys are playing, but quite frankly,
we've talked about it so much that there's like nothing to add anymore.
I mean, I really don't even care that much, to be honest with you. Like,
yeah,
sure. It's like we can look at the box score every game and see that Sabonis is playing 38 minutes, whatever, and think that it's too much and maybe it'd be better for the team if he wasn't playing as much. But it's like, I don't really think it slowed him down any to me personally. I think that what slowed him down is just, like you said, the predictability, what they're running, what they're doing, it just all seems very stagnant at points. And, you know, they just lack that creator. So to me, that's kind of where I'm at. But I did touch on it a little bit talking about Goga with the solo minutes. And I know you've been hitting on this a lot and we had a conversation about it off air.
Sorry, everybody.
But it's understandable because like the solo minutes for both these guys have been pretty good, but the minutes for Miles, I mean, depending on how big of a sample size it is, I haven't really looked at the numbers. I know you've been talking about it, but like they've been really good. And to me, it's like when you're struggling this badly, even if Sabonis is your all-star, why not play these minutes more? I don't understand that.
Well, let's zoom out on that conversation a little bit because I've thought about writing about this. I might. The solo Miles minutes have been awesome, like to the point of me dragging them. So many of them are with bench units, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that if you will go back to last year, that was the solo Sabonis minutes that were so kick-ass that made him have awesome stats and awesome on-offs and got him, frankly, into his all-star status, right? So I think it's just that the Pacers bench unit plus one center is a great group, and Turner just happens to be the guy in those units this year. Now, they should still play that unit more, right? That's what you're saying, and I agree with you. They should still try to fit Turner with those bench guys because they just pummel teams in those minutes, and I think if that comes at the expense of not playing Goga, you have to do it. There's 16 and 19. Like, you got to start winning at some point if you have these playoff aspirations. Sneaking in any number of wins above zero before Karis's return, given their March schedule, would be awesome, right? Like one win, you're like, yes, awesome. We beat the Lakers or whoever. Like that's awesome. So if that means playing that Turner bench group more, I'm all for it. If that means finding a way to try Sabonis with that bench group more without having Turner on the floor, maybe try that, you know, just something, because those lineups are working very well.
It worked well last year for the Pacers, and McMillan went to it a lot.
Yes,
I mean, Sabonis was like their sixth man, even though he was a starter. So,
yeah,
it was quite impressive how and him and McConnell and McDermott just clicked so well together. And I thought Justin Holiday fitted well with that group as well. So, it's an interesting dynamic with this team. I think could be unlocked in different ways, but it hasn't been so far. And instead, we're seeing Sabonis go out there and try to chase wing players on the three-point line. So it's been frustrating in that area. But you brought up Caris LeVert. I'm just curious. I mean, this might sound like a very dumb question, but how much do you really think LeVert will help this team overall?
A lot.
Yeah.
There we go. End of segment. No. Yeah. I mean, I think this goes back to the very first thing we talked about with their struggles. And I think me and Adam kind of talked about this when he talked about his return. It's just like, he adds a level of unpredictability that they don't have right now, right? He can kind of pass. He can credibly score from basically everywhere. His three's just not quite good enough to say everywhere in the same way you can with TJ Warren. But he can, you know, he can put the ball on the floor and get a shot from lots of spots on the floor, which is really impressive. And I think looking at his raw stats is, again, not the perfect way to illustrate how much he can help offensively, because he only played 28 minutes a game with the Nets. If you go to per 36, his points per 36 would be higher than anyone on the Pacers, right? His scoring per minute, it would literally be the best on the team. And his assist per minute would be higher than anyone except McConnell, which catching McConnell is impossible in assist per minute, so whatever. But, right, he's an underrated – well, actually, okay, underrated is not true. He's an okay passer, right, and they need that too. So I think his offensive help might be honestly a little understated. You know, he just – because of that unvariability it adds, even if he – is just standing away from the play and he catches it with a half step advantage because the defender is recovering. Like, that is so much more helpful than having Justin Holiday in the same situation, for example, who, like, yeah, again, Justin Holiday is having a phenomenal season, shooting really well, playing great defense, but he's going to shoot, or he's going to shot fake and take a dribble to the side and shoot. Like, you know what he's doing. Caris LeVert, you don't know what he's doing, and he's so dynamic that that'll be really helpful. His defense is just okay, so maybe you replace him for McDermott in the starters, and then he's still better than McDermott on D, but I just think he can help in a lot of areas that they're missing, mainly that predictability aspect, and I think that's going to help the Pacers a ton.
No, I agree.
Am I excited to watch him play.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It'll give this team a little bit new life, like just something different, you know, something to add into the mix. I think fans will just be excited to see how he plays, especially like the incredible story of him overcoming this whole cancers thing and just coming out of that, and the Pacers being able to find it and go through the deal and everything. I mean, it's a really cool story, so I'm hoping the best for him. And just as we wrap this part of the conversation up before I get into trade talk, your favorite thing to talk about, Nate Bjorkgren, how do you feel about the job he's done so far this season?
As a general liker of basketball X's and O's, I like his philosophies in general and as a concept, right? Get right. The ball out of good players' hands, try to make other guys beat you, move a lot on offense, try to make your hubs be smart and beat defenses. And, you know, look, he was paired with another genius-minded Nick Nurse in Toronto, right? So they had collaboration in a way that they can't have without Nick Nurse in Indiana. But we know that his stuff with the right guys can be awesome. Like Kawhi Leonard is not going to be on the Pacers, but they, even without Kawhi Leonard, the Raptors were good the year before. Now we're seeing with Nick Nurse, Leonard's gone, they're still good, right? His ideas are clearly founded in some level of basketball success. I believe in his X's and O's. I just think that integrating them in year one with a short offseason is kind of hard, and the personnel maybe not be perfect for the things he wants to do. And we're not going to talk about the minutes anymore, but he's a little heavy on the starter. So he definitely has flaws for sure. He's a first year head coach. You know, there's going to be ironing out stuff with all that forever. And it's not, you know, it's not quite his team yet or the vision of what he maybe perfectly wants to do. But I think he's a smart guy. The players really like him and his positivity. He's more of a player's coach than McMillan, which is something these guys wanted. We'll see if it actually manifests into any level of success. But, you know, this is something the team wanted. So I'm a fan of him so far in terms of philosophy and who he is as a person. But the results haven't come. And at some point, it's not now. It's probably a year from now at earliest. But at some point, if the results don't come, you have to go, okay, maybe this was a mistake. But so far, I think the foundation he set in terms of, you know, building that reputation with players and explaining to them exactly what he wants to do and having, you know, philosophies that are well-founded and have generated success with other teams. I think that all makes me believe that he's going to do well with this team. And once, you know, he has the right pieces, even if that's just LeVert and Warren, like, that's totally possible, then great. He could be awesome. So I think he's done a good job so far, but, you know, definitely the wins and losses part, which is what he will ultimately get judged on, has not been awesome.
Yeah, I think wins and losses will be a huge thing. And if they make the playoffs, which is still, you know, up in the air based on how these other teams perform.
I still think they will. I've been so confident the whole season. I still think they will.
I agree with you. I mean, I know a lot of people are interested in, like, getting into the draft again. But after seeing how the Pacers have drafted, I mean, do you really trust their judgment? I mean, that's my biggest fear.
No, I know. I agree.
And
unless
it's like,
they somehow get the 6% chance to jump into the top five. Like, okay, great. Now they have the 10th pick and they have been terrible at drafting for 4 years. Like, what? Why is this any better?
I think the most appealing thing to the Pacers, if they get the pick, is to trade it. And I don't think people really would want to talk about that because they want to see who they draft. But that could be their best asset if they attach that to something to get a quality
level player. Unless they draft Trace Jackson Davis, in which case they are the smartest team ever.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I don't know if I agree with that.
That's just a joke. I love Trace.
I like Trace.
I love Trace at IU. I don't know how good he'll be in the NBA, but I just.
I'll tell you what.
The only fun thing about that basketball team.
Dude, I'm an IU basketball fan, and I can't watch this team.
I've watched them in 4 years.
I literally will not watch them until Archie's not there. I think he's an awful coach.
They put college basketball games on a lot in like the media area of Pacers games when we're there. I think of Ryan Stevens, the Fever PR guy, helps with the channels. He kills it. But anyway, they have IU basketball in there, and sometimes like those guys catch the ball and they don't know what they're gonna do with it when they catch it. You know what I mean? It's the weirdest thing to me. I'm like, I've never seen that before. Whatever. This isn't an IU basketball
game. I know. I just
really want Trace to be awesome because I think his skills have not been able to be shown in college.
I will guarantee that he has a better career than Romeo Langford does in the NBA.
I disagree with you there. But
you think Romeo's gonna have a good career?
Yeah, this is not actually a thing that might happen, but this is like the trade that makes the most sense to me in the entire NBA is the Celtics somehow getting Harrison Barnes. So when Romeo Langford gets to the Kings and gets an opportunity to play, I can't wait for him to prove some people wrong.
All right, you brought up trade, so I let you talk me into this conversation.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
So, Harrison Barnes is actually – I did a top 10 list of players I would like the Pacers to look at the trade deadline, and he was actually number one on my list. Oh. And I've had some conversations with different people just talking about Harrison Barnes, and look, it would take a lot if the Pacers did not give up one of their bigs.
He's been awesome.
It would literally take Jeremy Lamb – Doug McDermott and Aaron Holiday, and I actually said you'd probably have to throw in a first round pick.
You're right.
And me and Mark were talking about it, and Mark said, I don't know about the first round pick, but I just think that if you're trying
need a first round pick with that.
Yeah, because to me, it's like the sum of the parts does not equal what you're getting back. And personally, for me, I just feel like either have to be a first round pick or Goga, and I'd rather give up the first round pick at this point, even though that would give you an overload of bigs. The biggest question would be, so if you get him. And then once Warren comes back, who's not starting? I'm like, who cares? You know, if you can get Harrison Barnes, I think that you could play many more solo minutes. And even if he comes off the bench as a sixth man, he could play starter level minutes. It doesn't mean like he doesn't get to play 30 plus minutes. I mean, there's plenty of room in there to get him into the game. And so I really feel like if that's a guy they can get, I think he really makes them better. And especially if we don't know how Warren's going to look when he comes back, he can play the three for a while and sit right in there with LeVert and Brogdon in the backcourt. I really like that idea of getting Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, he's really good. And I agree with your evaluation. I think of what it would take to get him like Lamb and Holiday is like at best a neutral trade package right now.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So McDermott's all the value you're really giving the Kings there in terms of player plus expiring. So I agree with your evaluation of the trade package. I think he's good and would help this team, especially with Warren out, right? He can play three, he can play four. I do worry, though, that they have a a log jam of forward. Yeah, you're. I don't know. I'm trying to think this through. Goga would not play ever if they got Harrison Barnes.
No, but I think it,
his season's over.
If you made this move, one, Harrison Barnes could be, you know, tradable. It's insurance if you lose TJ Warren, you know, for some reason, for at least one season. I think it also allows you, if you look at both of the bigs and realize, hey, we're better with, you know, Barnes, Warren, LeVert, a center, and Brogdon, then you could look at maybe making a trade. I'm not sure what the trade would be, but I think you get something of value in return, whether it's a bench player or whatever.
That's my I think my biggest aversion to Barnes is that he's not like Harrison. I want to phrase this well. I think Sam Esfandiari tweeted this and articulated it well. I'm paraphrasing it, but basically it's like Harrison Barnes is like tricking you as a fan base into like thinking about success, because Harrison Barnes is not good enough to get them over any humps that faced them in the playoffs, but he would take a first round pick to get. So it's like, well, he would help a lot. It's like you're giving up way too much to not get any extra success value back. You know what I mean? Like if they give up a first, they need a guy who's like, wow, that fit with the Pacers is so awesome that maybe now they can take down, you know, Philly or Milwaukee or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And maybe that's out there. I don't think so, but maybe that's out there. But that's what I would give up a first for. And Barnes is good. I agree with you that he would help this team a lot, but I think he's in that tricky tier of like, well, is that really worth it? Especially when you're under 500, like maybe not, but I get where you're coming from. He would definitely help a lot.
Yeah. So some names that might be easier to obtain, that I've gone through. I'm just going to get your thought, like just your thoughts. Like, and some of these might be just like straight up for Jeremy Lamb. Some of these might
You've heard me. I've come up with exactly two fake trades this entire
right.
I'm very boring. So
I'm trying to remember what trade you said again. Can you run those by me again? Just so
my two were, Jeremy Lamb for JJ Redick and Jeremy Lamb for Trevor Ariza.
Okay, so I didn't bring those guys up just because they're older. But this guy's kind of older too. It's Al-Farouq Aminu. He makes the same amount of money as Lamb, and he's on the
Magic. He is on the Magic, right?
Yeah. Correct. I think he makes about 9.5.
Has he played this season?
Yeah, he's played in 9 games, started 6. He's shooting 40, it looks like.
Hurt for a while.
40% from 3. It's only averaging.
No offense to him, but that's not.
Yeah, real. It's 0.7 out of 1.7 attempts per game. So not a lot there. So, but at 5.2 points, I just feel like his defense would be way better than what Lamb's providing. And he's an expiring, so maybe they think.
I was going to say the contract is the key there, is he's expiring.
And he is expiring. 6'8".
He's not expiring.
He's not? Does he have one more year?
I disagree. He has one more year at $10 million. Although I would trade Jeremy Lamb straight up for him because I think he's better than Jeremy Lamb.
I agree. But does Orlando think that? I mean, Jeremy Lamb's younger.
Guards like that can breathe and have a pulse pretty badly.
I know. And if they're going to lose Fournier next year, they've got Terrence Ross. And that's number two on my list is Terrence Ross. I've always liked Terrence Ross as like a bench player, bench scorer.
That's interesting. Yeah, Lamb is going to be probably the guy I focus most of my fake trade, my very minimal fake trade energy on in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I don't know what it would take to get him. Like
Terrence Ross.
He's got 3 years left, I think, on his contract.
He's balling this year, isn't he? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He's playing really well. I mean, it might take Lamb and Aaron. I know that what you said about Aaron Holiday today and how the Pacers view him, but quite frankly, I think he could be – something that is a sweetener in a deal.
I agree with that.
And I don't really think Terrence Ross is just like a short-term investment. I think that he could be somebody that's on the team for a couple of years.
If Ross was like 1 year younger, he would fit the Kevin Pritchard MO of trade targets to a T, right? Lots of years left, playing well, kind of around their prime. He's 30, right? He's already 30. He just turned 30. Yeah, right this season, I think. So, yes, okay, it is a season. So that does fit the Pritchard MO pretty well. And, again, he's playing well. He's better than Lamb, too.
15.5 points a game. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's and the best part about trading for Terrence Ross is he can't play against the Pacers anymore.
Yeah, and he's only started in 2 games, so he's a bench player. He knows his role.
Yeah,
That's kind of why I'm like, man, I really like him. Another one, I think Adam brought this up, was George Hill.
Yeah, I'd love that.
He's a, you know, it's interesting, but I feel like I was talking with Fauci about this. I'm like, if you bring him in to the starting like lineup with the starters, you know, maybe you could take out one of the bigs in certain playoff situations and let him play next to Brogdon. That could be interesting to me as far as that goes, just because I think he's a good defender. At this point in his career, though, I don't know how great he is and how much, you know, playing with Giannis did benefit him. But I still
he was good in Utah too, though.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I feel like he just is a very steady player, knows his role and embraces it. This is a guy that I brought up to. It's Josh Richardson with Dallas. I know he's starting, but I know that they've been kind of underwhelmed with him, and they probably want to make a change. And I've heard some
A team underwhelmed after acquiring Josh Richardson? That has never happened before. That can't be right.
Well, for what Seth Curry's doing with Philadelphia,
yeah, too. That too. That trade does not look good.
No, and so they need shooting really bad in Dallas, and so that's a name that I thought he might be interesting to bring onto the Pacers. And
he's good. He's the opposite of Lamb. He's good on D and gives a lot of effort there, and has some kind of lazy offensive tendencies.
Yeah, I mean, and Lamb's shooting the ball well, so that could be something they're like, hey, you know, he's a good shooter, good offensive player.
I don't know if the Mavs who just we're very happy to get him. Would like to give him up, but that's interesting.
Interesting guy.
Okay. And then this is somebody that you're probably familiar with, but I think he's injured right now. It's Gary Harris. I know he's not been very good.
Adam just roasts me for Gary Harris takes like all the time. Off air, Adam might as well just say Gary Harris 100 times. Like, Riley, stop recording because he loves making fun of me for that.
So what's the whole point of that? I don't know the inside joke.
So the Pacers played the Nuggets in February of 2017, right? This is like Vic is emerging, but he's not quite like famous yet. You know, he's had a few awesome games. And I said, and Gary Harris, this was Gary Harris' best season of his career. He finished the season with 17.5 points per game.
Yeah.
I said, I think Gary Harris is as good, if not a little better than Oladipo right now. And then Oladipo had 47 points and hit like the game tying shot sent overtime, and they won the game in overtime. And then ever since then, Oladipo's been off. Well, not ever since then, but the rest of that season and part of the next season, Oladipo was awesome and Gary Harris was trash. And
yeah,
it's like, you're so dumb. But yeah, Gary Harris can't shoot anymore. So his value is all defense, and he's a good player, but his contract's a lot for a guy who was basically just a one-sided player.
Yeah. I think you could get him if you did trade Lamb and McDermott, which
I wouldn't give up that much for Gary Harris. Yeah, I wouldn't give up that much for Gary.
You don't think so?
No. $20 million.
He's 26 years old, though, and I think the Pacers need defense.
If he had one more year in his deal, he would fit the Pritchard MO pretty well, right in his prime, lots of years left.
And I think he could be attached for another trade. Like, I think that's something Denver could have up their sleeve. Like, hey, he makes a ton of money, so they could attach him in a trade. Yep. I mean, that's why I don't think they would do it, but he's just a name that I brought up. So then I'm going to get a little bit weird here. I'm going to go to Houston's team, and I know everybody keeps looking at P.J. Tucker, but some guys that make, you know, hardly any money – but have been pretty good for their rotation is Daniel House and David Nwaba. Would you be interested in trying to acquire any of those players in a smaller deal?
Big fan of Nwaba. House has been pretty bad this year, right? I might be wrong about that. Yeah, House is down to 31% from three. Ooh, he's an okay defender, but I've caught the Rockets a few times and he has not been impressive. Nwaba has been impressive, including a good game against the Pacers, right, earlier this season.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the reasons he came up to me. So I've kind of kept my eye on him. Jayshon Tate's been really good, too.
Yeah, he might not even be available. Tate's, like, awesome.
Yeah, so it's like, I was like, I didn't even put Tate in any trade. Like, he's literally making $1.4 million over the next 3 years. So I was like, and he's 25. I'm like, God, that'd be a great player to get.
Nwaba, way worse shooter than House, but, like, obscenely good on defense and great, like, slasher. Like, whereas House is, like, was supposed to be the specialist on offense and has not been. Yeah, Nwaba would be good if the Rockets are selling. The Rockets are so interesting because they have so many guys that I don't think are first-year in value, but they have a lot of guys, like, in that hair. Like, P.J. Tucker's the perfect Harrison Barnes guy where it's like, okay, yeah, you give a first, and, like, you have your cool, you have P.J. Tucker now. But, like, there's the meme about, remember him being the LeBron stopper that the Raptors had? And there's the
meme
where he's like, LeBron stop, you know? And it doesn't, like giving up a first for that, like, if you're already pretty good, like, Boston level, I think makes some sense. But at the Pacers level, you know, getting a Tucker level guy doesn't make any sense. But Nwaba level guy, you know, what's interesting about Nwaba is he is very similar to a player we have heard reportedly the Pacers are interested in, that's Garrett Temple.
Well, that was the next guy on my list that I was going to bring up. But
you're welcome. You are welcome for the
trade. I didn't want to transition yet, though, so it's a little ahead of the game.
But Nwaba and Temple are a lot alike if you don't want to transition yet.
Right. we can talk about Temple in a second, but when I was looking at trades, I'm like, man, you know, like this is probably, I think you'll say no to this idea. But I think this is the only way you could probably get Nwaba if you're trying to get off Lamb or McDermott, and that's including Eric Gordon in the trade. I know I know his contract is gross, but is he better than Jeremy Lamb right now?
Oh my God, way better this year.
Okay, so that's what I'm
saying. I don't want to be critical of Jeremy Lamb because he is shooting awesome. Like, great on offense, and he's still killing the Pacers when he's in the game. So, I mean, he's just like a shooting slump away from being like the, like maybe the 13th best player on the Pacers team. Like I would throw him a lot of trades. No offense to him. He looks awesome on offense and deserves a lot of credit for keeping his body ready to do that kind of stuff. And Eric Gordon's been a lot better than him. Eric Gordon is also due a guaranteed 50 something huge million.
Yeah. He's at 16.8 this year. I'm not sure what the rest of his contract is, but that to me, it's like,
and if Eric Gordon didn't have any injury history, you know, maybe you could smile a little bit and be like, okay, you know what? That's fine. He hasn't played over 70 games. He's played over 70 games once since his rookie year. So no, I do not want Eric Gordon.
Okay. My whole thing was if you could get David Awaba in return for those two guys, like you're already going to lose McDermott more than likely in free agency would be my guess. Oh, even though I know, I think he's going to get overpaid. And I don't think
that's very possible.
I don't feel like the Pacers are going to go in the luxury to keep him.
I've said it before. Joe Harris is the best thing that ever happened to Doug McDermott, man.
Like, oh, for sure.
Finishes the year at 35% from deep, in which
it doesn't matter. I think if this is the reputation, could be like that. And that's why I'm like, okay. And the Pacers, we know they have a hard time getting guys in here. Like, sure, you get like whatever type of player in here, but it's not somebody you're keeping long term. And I think that's where the appeal comes to Gordon having a lengthier contract. Even though he could get worse, he's 32, obviously, just turned 32 last year on Christmas. I didn't realize he was born on Christmas. That's interesting. But he's an IU guy, and I know that it might sound dumb to us, but the fans would probably be excited about that. And I think that, unfortunately, I think the front office would probably look at that as a bit of a reason to bring him in here, even though it might be a dumb reason. But, so then my last guy, you brought him up, Garrett Temple. I was interested in Jay Michael's reporting about that. What do you think the Pacers even tried to offer for Garrett?
Yeah, Garrett Temple, we talked about him yesterday on my show, so I have the thoughts ready.
Okay.
I think he's in the sweet spot of if the Pacers are buyers, he's the level of player they'll go for. Not because he's, like, amazing or anything, but, I mean, they need help, right? They're clearly not doing as well as they thought, and he is useful and good, but he would only take, you know, whatever, 2 seconds or something minor that you're not, you know, the Pacers have 3 seconds in the coming draft if they keep their own pick, 2 if they send the one from, they still have that pick from the Thaddeus Young trade to the Nets that eventually has to convey. But if they, you know, if they're between 45 and 60, they have 3 second rounders in this draft. And they already have so many guys locked up next year. It's like, what the hell are they going to do with 3 second round picks, right? They can draft and stash, or they can use one to, you know, get Garrett Temple in the door and help them win some games now. I think that makes a lot of sense because he's a useful player and he wouldn't cost too much. And he fits in the trade exception they got in the Oladipo-Levert deal, which I think is a key factor there. Like they could just send out Keelan Martin as a minimum. They bring in Temple, salary matching, not important. Bulls love to save the money. That probably, you know, the Bulls probably wanted more for him, which is why, you know, they didn't want to deal him in the division for nothing. But, you know, that kind of trade makes a lot of sense to me in terms of what they have to offer, what they're dealing with in the coming offseason and their cap situation. So I get why they would pursue that so hard. But, you know, it's Garrett Temple, right? Like he's even lower on the Harrison Barnes scale of like he's not actually helping you win a single extra playoff game. He's getting you maybe to the playoffs. And that's why I'd give up a pick for him.
Yeah. And I like him a lot, actually. I think Garrett Temple makes a lot of sense for this team. But at the same time, like Chicago's trying to make the playoffs and he's shooting really well and playing, he plays a good defense. So it's like, and we're kind of struggling. So it's been interesting. But last team that I think is got some players that could be interesting is New York. And this is just for like,
I haven't thought about the next
time. So they've got.
Oh, like, yes, I have one New York guy, but go ahead.
Who is your, is it Alec Burks?
It's not Alec Burks.
Okay, so mine was Austin Rivers.
Oh, yeah, he's not playing at all anymore, is he?
No, he got taken out of the rotation. I thought he was pretty good in the playoffs the last couple of years, even though
Austin Rivers does very good against the Pacers, so maybe.
But, I mean, I thought he did good in the playoffs, too, overall. He's a hard player. And then another guy, Frank Ntilikina, is, you know, someone that's really struggled. I know Kevin Knox is probably a popular name people have talked about because he's, you know, they've talked about selling him low, but, like, to me, I was more so thinking like, if you don't keep McDermott, would you be interested in taking a flyer on like Frank Ntilikina and Austin Rivers from McDermott and Jakar Sampson? I think they also have the 2021 second round pick from Detroit. So if you could get that involved, I think that'd be interesting. But that was like a trade that I thought this could make some sense.
No, the Knicks player I would be interested in is Reggie Bullock, and he is not available. He starts.
Yeah. and well, that's what I was trying to look at. You know, like
he's good. He's like a fake starter. You know, he plays like the seventh or eighth most minutes on their team, I think. But he can shoot it incredibly. He's like incredibly is not what I just said, but it's what it sounded like I said. I said credibly. And is an okay offensive player in other areas. So he would help the Pacers kind of in a Garrett Temple level role, makes about the same money. But you're right, that's not the guy they would get from the Knicks. It would be in the Ntilikina, Knox, Austin Rivers kind of grouping. Yeah, I like Frankie Smokes. I always kind of have. If they're just giving him away, I think I would do that. But you know, I wouldn't give up McDermott for any of those guys.
Okay. Well, that was my thought. Like if McDermott, you don't feel like you're gonna be able to re-sign him, then maybe you look at investing in a young player like Ntilikina.
Yeah, that's what you want to do with McDermott. If you know you're not even gonna offer him anything, or you're afraid that you're not gonna be able to keep up. Yeah. With anything else, then you basically have to trade him, right? So,
okay. Well, I know you
think about.
I know you're a salary guru, and so I have to ask because when you're trying to like plug in trades, like different trade things, you don't really know how accurate they are with their salary situations, and sometimes I feel like that can be the case. So, like Luke Kennard got a big extension from the Clippers.
Poison pill. Gross.
But they don't show that whenever you go to do like trades for him. On fake trades, which I don't understand, but like it shows it for other players, but not him. And it was like very odd to me because like you could trade in the trade NBA app, McDermott and picks, like second round picks for Luke Kennard, but they would have to give up like Reggie Jackson to make the salaries match because they're over the cap and they could.
Well, his new contract doesn't start till next year, right? That's why I probably
right. So is that what it is?
Yeah, he's currently still on his rookie deal technically.
Okay. We'll see the same thing happened with OG and Anobi. Like he's got the poison pill, even though
Poison pill. My advice for anyone who wants to trade for a poison pill contract would be turn your computer off because it is impossible. It is the most confusing thing in the world. It is technically legally possible, but it is so effing confusing that.
But that's why I wasn't sure because, like I said, it didn't show it.
Yeah.
In the thing, I didn't know if it was legit or not. Like, why is there no poison pill added to that?
He should have poison pill. Luke Kennard should have poison pill.
Okay, because
so what would his total is probably I can't do math.
I thought it was like 4 for 64. Was that right?
4 for 64 plus this year, like 4 million. So 5 for 68, that's 13, 14-ish of outgoing, but it counts as three. Man, that's really hard. That's just really hard.
Maybe because the Patriots have exceptions. I don't know.
The way poison pill works is he counts as 13 mil of incoming salary for the team that's acquiring him, mm-hmm. but he only counts 3 mil of outgoing salary for the team that's sending him out. So you have to bridge that gap by adding up the salaries to the point where it fits within like the 1.25 times salary. Oh, this is way too dorky. So you'd have to get up to like 20 million salaries to make that $10 million gap go away. It's hard. It's so hard.
That is weird. Yeah, well, because then my fake trade wouldn't make any sense then if that's the case. Because I was wondering about it, and I was like, why is there no poison pill? But it worked. It was basically McDermott and 2 second-round picks for Reggie Jackson and Luke Kennard. Just because you have to have somebody that has salary that can match up, and, like, they don't really have a lot of low-key salary players. I mean, maybe you could throw in, like, Patrick Patterson or whatever, but who wants that player? I don't really want Reggie Jackson either, but – I was just trying to think of something because, you know, they're a team that needs shooting and Kennard's really been out of the rotation because he's been so inconsistent. 24 years old, I thought he would make some sense for the Pacers, but especially if the Clippers are in win now mode. But yeah, now that you kind of crushed my dreams with the poison pill, I gotta turn that one off. But last one here, this is a three team trade that I came up with and I ran it by somebody. They said that it was too much. To give up, but I said Jeremy Lamb and McDermott to Orlando, George Hill and Terrence Ross to Indiana, Aaron Holiday and Michael Carter-Williams to Oklahoma City.
Wait, so they give up Aaron Holiday, Jeremy Lamb, McDermott, and they get Ross and George Hill?
Yeah, that was my
trade. No, that's a good value. I don't know who's telling you that's too much. That's pretty good value.
Well, they said OKC would laugh because George Hill's a buyout player.
What's OKC getting
for George Hill? Aaron Holiday and Michael Carter-Williams just to make salaries match.
I don't get why they wouldn't do that. Those values are okay.
I feel like it made sense for the Pacers. Plus,
I'm scratching my head. I think that's mostly okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing like the.
Yeah, Ariza and George Hill. If you're like, hey, if you tell Sam Presti, like, come scratch his back, you're like, yeah, you can have him.
Yeah, that's why I think that's what he was saying. Like, don't give up Aaron for him. Like, you could throw in, like, Jakar, but I'm like, I don't know. Like, maybe. Maybe a Jakar in a second. I don't know what it would take, but they took TJ Leaf off of our hands. I would love to give him Jalen.
Like compared to your Harrison Barnes stuff, that's the same core without the pick, right?
And yeah,
like we said, that the only positive value there is whatever value McDermott has. So,
and I like George Hill's contract. I think it's like they can waive it next year.
Over 2 years.
Yeah. And then Terrence Ross is on a good contract. And I think that would be like, hey, but I don't think Orlando would do it. Because all they're getting is Layman McDermott, that they wouldn't want that.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, when you're trying to think of trade ideas, it's so hard. But that's where I'm at with it. It's just like, yeah, whatever. Just try to throw different names out there, because it feels like everybody that's all the same contracts just keep coming up, you know, and guys that could actually be obtainable. Like, I know Pacer fans want Thad Young, that type of player, but I just don't think he's available. And someone like Larry Nance Jr., I don't think he's available, like, for what we have to offer.
And so, also in the Harrison Barnes tier, both of them.
Yeah. See, and I don't think I would.
If you're the Celtics, yeah, that's the team that's like, yes, I'll give up a first for that level of guy. The Pacers are 16 and 19 and in 10th. They do not give up first for that level of guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I should probably wrap this up. We've got Antonio Davis coming on next, so it's a lengthy segment here, but it's going to be a long podcast. But I think there's a lot of good things to talk about.
Oh, I'm leading off for him? I didn't know it was that order. Oh, my gosh, the pressure. You've traded Anthony East for Antonio Davis. That's a home run trade, Alex. Great job.
That's what I'm all about, making good trades here. Obviously, my trade ideas have been blah, but anyway, WTHR.com. Talk a little bit more about that real quick.
Yeah, it's the new Tegna, who owns WTHR, acquired the Locked On Podcast Network. They're expanding their podcasting reach. They love the local aspect of it because Tegna owns a lot of local news stations. So you'll see some of the Locked On Pacers podcasts on WTHR. And when big things happen in Pacerland, I will get to write columns about it for them. So that's really cool.
That is super cool, man. Well, congratulations to you. Happy for you. And, you know, anything.
Same to you. This is on Blue Wire now, which is also sweet.
Yeah, it's still in the process.
Oh, shoot. I shouldn't have said that.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Okay. We've signed the contract. It's just
okay.
The process of moving the RSS feeds has been, you know, how that goes. Yeah. But we're eventually going to be on there. You know, want to give a shout out to Overtime Media for having us for the last 6 months, 8 months. They've been terrific, and you know, they've been awesome to pick us up. But yeah, Blue Wire, we're really excited about that, man. So cool opportunity for both of us to just keep growing, and excited about it.
Pacers,
so
podcasts are flying.
I love it.
To the moon, as the kids are saying these days.
Anything you want to plug though before we get off here?
No, I don't think so. I'll have a story. I will have a cool story soon. I don't know when people are listening to this. I'm writing about the Fever and their new partnership with Anthem to allow them to have better community outreach. And it's a really cool thing they're doing. Talk to Tiffany Mitchell about some of the stuff they've been doing. So it's going to be cool.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, that does sound cool. So be on the lookout for that. You can find them at TSNBA. And we'll be right back with Antonio Davis and Fauci.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Pacer Nation, joining us now is former Indiana Pacers big man Antonio Davis. Antonio, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I just got to start things off, man. Like, what's going on in your world right now? How are you doing?
Well, I was living in Atlanta for about, I guess, 10 years or so. And the last couple of years, I just moved back to Northern California, where I'm originally from. And since I've been here, man, it's really just been a blessing. You know, my mom retired a couple of years ago. I got nieces and nephews that are growing and cousins that I've missed forever. So just kind of getting acclimated to being back home. All the kids are grown now and out of the house. AJ's over in Greece playing ball, and Kayla's in Israel getting ready to go into the WNBA. My two oldest daughters are about to be new moms, so I'll be a grandpa. Well, I am a grandpa. I'll be a grandpa for the second and third time. So other than that, man, just, you know, hanging low, staying out of the way. With all the crazy mess that's going on in the world today, just blessed to wake up every day healthy, right frame of mind, and just, you know, ready to deal with life.
Hey, congrats to that. It sounds like, you know, everyone in the family is doing really well. And when you mentioned, you know, two of your kids playing overseas, something that you were very familiar with, Antonio, you had, you know, not the typical path to the NBA as a second round pick, played overseas for a few seasons before coming to the NBA with the Pacers. How rewarding was it to be able to make it to the NBA right around age 25?
You know, it was great. I never really had that dream of playing in the NBA, you know. I think for me starting out, I just wanted to go to college. I wanted to have an opportunity to have a good life. And from what I was told at the time, it was go to school and get an education. So that's kind of where my mind was. And then as I grew, you know, probably 2 or 3 inches in high school, and then another 2 or 3 inches in college, and I go from, you know, 6'1", 6'2", to like 6'7", 6'8", you know, then things change really quickly, you know. And so going overseas was really one of those things where, you know, skill-wise, I just didn't think that I was, you know, coming out of college and ready to add value to an NBA team. And so my agent at the time, Bill Duffy, you know, I talked to him about options, like what, and he talked to me about options, like, you know, what we could do to, you know, get me some more experience. And playing overseas was obviously an option. And it really helped. And Donnie Walsh at the time, I was very excited about what he told me, which was basically, you know, he didn't have a problem with that. He thought it'd be good for me. So I went overseas and just, you know, I practiced twice a day. You only play a couple games a week. It really gave me an opportunity to hone my game and more than anything, just grow up as a young man. You know, you come out of college, you think you know, but you really don't know, you know. So having the opportunity to spend a few years just kind of growing up and getting prepared for the NBA really, really helped me out.
Yeah, and I think what's really important to notice here is you joined this Pacers team in 93, 94, right when they were starting to take that leap from, you know, being a good playoff team to, you know, really starting to compete with the upper echelon teams of the Eastern Conference, those bloodbaths against New York and Chicago that we're all familiar with. But I got to go back and just, what is the most memorable part of that time in the early part of your career, just kind of having to go up against those New York Knicks teams and those Chicago Bulls teams head to head? What were those series like for you?
You know, let me start off by just, you know, thanking Donnie Walsh and the Pacers for, you know, even drafting me, even considering that, right? Mm-hmm. That was such a blessing within itself. And then to come on to a team that had so many veterans, you know, Reggie Miller, LaSalle Thompson, Vern Fleming, you know, Dale had just gotten there. So it was, you know, the one thing I learned is coming on to a team with veterans that teach you how to be a professional, teach you how to come in each and every day and work really hard. That doesn't always happen, you know, and I was very fortunate to become an Indiana Pacer. And then, yes, to come in during a time where, you know, each and every night you're having some true battles, but, you know, during a period of time in basketball where I think was, you know, so pivotal at that time, you know, the game was changing a lot. I think, you know, a lot of European players are being introduced into the NBA, the style of play, you know, that the New York Knicks established and the Chicago Bulls had mastered along with the Detroit Pistons. You know, I think the NBA was trying to figure out, you know, how do we make this game more exciting and not so much a bloodbath, you know? But I embraced all of that and learned how to play that way and adjusted as things came. And and it was a great experience, you know, especially those playoff runs, you know. But more than anything, I just remember, you know, kind of being around Reggie and the whole Indiana Pacers deal. You know, like, to him, it was bigger than just basketball and winning a game. You know, it was like representing small town Indiana against, you know, big city New York Knicks or, you know, big city Chicago Bulls. So it was always a great challenge for us to go out and represent Indiana.
You know, some of those rivalries, you know, the term bloodbath, it just feels like it's summed up, you know, 90s style basketball that us fans miss today. But I couldn't just glance over, you mentioned Reggie Miller, without being able to ask, can you take us through what it was like in that infamous 8 points in 8.9 seconds against the Knicks? I believe it might have been a game that I think you might have been ejected in. Was that true?
Yeah. I was just about to say, I watched that game just like everybody else. You know, I had kind of a backroom view of it. But, you know, I will say this about Reggie. When you were on the floor with Reggie or on his team, you always felt like you had a chance, right? I don't care if it's fourth quarter, 2 minutes left, down eight, you feel like you have a chance to win. Get him open, you know, get some stops, and he'll make it happen, right? So that just used to be my thing is, I'm going to defend, make sure I get this rebound, and make sure I get him open. And we got a chance to win. And most times we did, you know? So it was great playing with a guy like that who had that type of confidence and skill, you know, and really, you know, they say ice in the veins. Reggie wasn't scared of anything, you know? Any big moment he embraced, and we always knew we had a shot.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that game seven against the Chicago Bulls in 1998. Obviously, the Pacers had a huge lead to start out, and the Bulls come back. Just kind of walk me through what you guys were talking about in the locker room after that disappointing loss, because, you know, I think a lot of fans felt like you guys could have competed with Utah had you made the NBA Finals that year.
Yeah, man, you know, I think when it was all said and done, I think the one thing we could all agree on is, you know, we kind of gave it our all, right? Mm-hmm. With that series, we just felt like, you know, each and every game, who was going to show up that day and just play better, you know? And most days we showed up, we gave it our best shot. And those days we won, we were just better that day. The next day was a different day. You know, I think we were evenly matched. You know, we home court advantage was obviously a big one. You know, playing that game seven in Chicago is different than playing it in Indiana, for sure, right? So I don't think we kind of felt like, you know, we disappointed each other. You know, we made a couple more mistakes than they did. They hit them a couple more shots than we did. And that's kind of how we felt about it.
Hey, no, I mean, it's not easy taking down Michael Jordan. Very few can say that they've done that. But, you know, the Pacers run it back, another close conference finals against the Knicks. And then, you know, the following year, I mean, rightfully so, you're looking for a, you know, more of an opportunity. And the Pacers do make a move. They make a move that sends you to Toronto. And yeah. I'm sure, Antonio, you've heard it before, and I believe it to be the truth. And so do many other Pacer fans. We feel that if you had been with the team in that NBA Finals in 2000, that you could have made a difference. I mean, at least help slow down Shaq a little bit. Do you think that? And I have to put it that way because that's MVP Shaq. But
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Six more fouls.
Exactly.
That's it. There you go. Six more fouls.
Do you think maybe that six-game series could have been a little bit different? Think about this. Three of those losses were decided by 14 points total.
Yeah. I mean, I went to a couple of those games. I know I went to one, and I watched them all. And, I mean, it was just crazy, you know, being in that environment. And I was so happy for those guys too. You know, there was nothing in me that wasn't happy, right? To answer your question, yeah, I do believe that, you know, maybe things could have been different. And I know that's very vague, but I would like to think that I would have been helpful in their quest to get to the finals. But again, you are talking about a Shaq and Kobe, who at that time were just, man, they were playing some incredible basketball and they had a great group of guys around them. You know, and the other thing for me is when I look back, man, I just was like, I don't know if I mean, I'm never going to second guess, and I appreciate everything Toronto allowed me to do, or, you know, given me the opportunity to do. But there are times where I was like, man, I wish I would have stayed, you know? Mm-hmm. But I also knew, you know, hey, I come in at 25, you don't really get a lot of opportunity to, you know, kind of decide your fate, you know? And I felt like it was going to be the one time that I was going to have a choice and I was going to be able to kind of create my own value. And I think that's why all of that happened. But again, you know, I probably would have given it all back to play in that one series, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't get back to the finals. I didn't get a chance to experience, you know, winning the conference finals or none of that, right? So that's always going to be, you know, a part of what I think about is part of my NBA career.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think it's really cool that you were actually at some of those games to support the guys. And I'm sure probably I got to ask, because when you get traded like that in the NBA, and I know it can be difficult because transactions are hard for everybody involved, but, you know, you started out with the Pacers, you spent 6 years with them. You know, looking back, you know, you get traded. How much did you feel like you were still a part of that, you know, that group of guys, that team, even though you were on the Raptors technically in 2000?
Oh, man, when they lost, I felt it. You know what I'm saying? When they won, I felt it. I was still, you know, talking to those guys. I still was, you know, to this day, you know, Dell Davis is still my good friend. I just got off the phone with him the other day, you know.
Love it.
So I, you know, I hated it for them, you know, but they played well. I mean, they gave the Lakers all they can handle, you know. The Lakers were just a great team. There's nothing you could, you know, say or do about that. So, yeah, it was difficult to watch. It was difficult to be there, you know. I found myself sweating on the sidelines, you know, wishing I was, you know, in the game. But, yeah, I was proud of those guys, man. They did a great job.
Yeah, now, hey, we missed you. But, you know, when you go over to Toronto, you end up being a full-time starter over there. You even make the 2001 All-Star team. So, you know, it shows that, hey, individually, you made the right move and you were able to grow there. But you also get the Raptors into the playoffs for the first time, which I thought was really underrated. But you're playing with two young up-and-coming guys in Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter. Did you know early on that those two were going to be special?
You know, I did. You know, we debated all the time about the both of them, what would happen, and what would happen if they stayed together. And unfortunately they didn't, you know, but Vince and Tracy would square off in practice every day and, you know, led us as captains and really, you know, watched them grow over the course of just that one season, you know, and was kind of begging Tracy, you know, at the time. And I understood, you know, looking back, I understood why he left, but it was a crazy thing to be around those two young guys at that moment, because they were just so raw and so talented, you know, and for both of them to go on and continue to expand their game. Because, you know, the fear is for a Vince Carter, a guy with that kind of athleticism, you're thinking, okay, he's not going to last long if he can't shoot the ball. And then he showed you very early on that he can shoot the ball. He can shoot deep threes. He had a mid-range game, and he continued to get better. And you had to respect him because he was just so athletic, right? So it was, you know, being a part of that team was really, it was a lot of fun. And at the time, being in Canada, especially in Toronto, you know, competing with the Maple Leafs during that time of year for fans, mm-hmm. you know, was really cool, man. You know, I enjoyed every moment of it.
Yeah, and so I have to ask this because Jalen Rose, one of your former teammates, was on ESPN on his show, Jalen and Jacoby, this week, and it was a clip that kind of went around, and I really appreciated it, as he said, you know, we got to quit this media narrative to try to get, you know, good players in small markets to go to big markets. And, you know, obviously Indiana being a smaller market, it can have its challenges of, acquiring free agents and that kind of thing. But as someone who played in a small market, what can you say, you know, you played with New York and Chicago. So I'm just curious the differences you saw with playing in a small market compared to a big market. And your thoughts on what Jalen had to say about all these people trying to get the good player out of a small town as quick as possible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one side is the business side, which I understand. You know, you got a Giannis playing in Milwaukee. Is that best for business? Probably not. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is it good for basketball in the city of Milwaukee? For sure. You know? I think the one thing for me is, you know, being in Indiana in a smaller market, you kind of felt attached to that community and those fans. You know what I mean? It was such a great feeling. And the team, you know, I remember going back there and all of the Simons clan, now their kids had kids and all of that. Just kind of that family feeling, you know, that I think you get lost going to a New York. It's almost like a business and the expectations are high. And if you're not good enough, they just get rid of you. You know, there's no loyalty whatsoever. It's all about winning and being on top. You know, when I was in Indiana, I felt like a part of that city, a part of that community, a part of that team, and the fan base. So I went out there and played like I appreciated that. And I don't think you get that same feeling if you're in a New York or a Chicago to that extent. Now, don't get me wrong. There's the perks of playing in those big cities too, right? You know, the exposure and all that you get. But a lot of times, you know, that's only beneficial to the big stars, right? That's not really beneficial to a majority of the players. So I don't agree that, you know, hey, get Giannis out of Milwaukee. That's not the answer. I think the answer is continue to find him players to build around him, because how great would it be to, you know, have a championship come out of Milwaukee, you know, such a small town. So we'll see how all that plays out.
You know, you mentioned Pacers ownership. You know, when things are great, hey, everyone's happy. When things are, you know, not going as well as, you know, we hoped, sometimes the fans might kind of blame the ownership to say they're more content with just being a steady playoff team instead of going for it all. Do you buy that at all, having been part of the organization?
No, I don't. You know, I will say this. I think there are, you know, if there's 30 teams in the NBA, right? I would say there's probably in any given season, right? At any given point, I feel like there's probably 12 teams, maybe, that are thinking, hey, we got a shot, so we're going to go for it, right? Because everybody can't have a shot. And I don't think it's great business to, you know, to put all your eggs in one basket. Like it just take, it's a process to get to the playoffs, right? Like if you, you know, if you don't have the ingredients, if you don't have a star player and some supporting roles, and in today's NBA, if you don't have two or three superstars in the supporting cast, you know you're not going to win a championship, right? So if you know that, then what are you shooting for? What's the next best thing? So wherever you are in that process will determine kind of your moves, right? And it just depends on how the fans view that. And like I said, I think Pacer fans who I feel like are real basketball savvy understands kind of the ebb and flow of, okay, we got to put a team together so we can be good. So we might not be good this year, but we're going to, you know, we're going to be good the year after or the year after. Whereas, you know, you're in some of these big markets and it doesn't matter. The fans don't care, you know, spend the money, get whoever we need when we need them so that we're always winning. So I think that that's a big difference.
Yeah, so I got to ask you about this year's Pacers team. I'm not sure if you got to see them too much, but, you know, Domantas Sabonis is a two-time All-Star now. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on him as a player and this current Pacers team.
You know, I've watched him a little bit. You know, I'll be honest, I don't watch much basketball nowadays, to be honest. But when I do watch, I'm not surprised. I watched him a little bit in college, and I thought that he would be good, not this good. But again, you just have to look at the way that basketball is being played today. Like if kids are making that, you know, really starting in college and their coach is giving them an opportunity, say at that size, you know, to play different roles on the team and understand what it's going to take, then you got a shot, you know, and he's obviously taking full advantage of it. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, where the Pacers end up this year. You know, I think my buddy Greg Foster joined the team this year as an assistant coach, and I talked to him a lot, and he's excited about, you know, about being there and, you know, the kids that are there playing and whatnot. So, you know, we talk a lot about that, but I think from his perspective, it's get in there, you know, work hard every day, and wherever the chips lie at the end of the year, you do a reassessment and try to come back and be better the next year. So we'll see how they manage to get through the season.
And only time will tell, but to wrap this up, I figured we'd play a little quick hot seat rapid fire. First initial instinct that comes to your mind would be about, let's see, six quick questions. Starting from the top, favorite teammate of yours?
Favorite teammate of mine, Dale Davis.
I love it. Toughest player that you had to guard?
Between Shaquille O'Neal and Tim Duncan.
Ooh, two Hall of Famers right there. Player that you looked up to or tried to model your game after growing up?
Whoa. You know, early on, I saw this fight that Maurice Lucas had, and I wanted to be him, man. I wanted to walk on the floor and people go, ooh, he about to come in the game.
Well, you did intimidate a few people in your day, so you did a good job at that. Most heartbreaking playoff series loss you were a part of?
Obviously, that four-point play with Larry Johnson, New York, whole season.
We weren't trying to bring up old ghosts.
I know. It's okay, though. You know, I've had a lot of therapy. I've had time to sit on the couch and think about that one, so I'm good with it now. Uh-huh. But I really hurt for my teammates, right? We prepared that year. We were ready. We knew we had a chance. And not saying that that one play was it, but to me it was.
Well, I want to interject real quick. Do you remember the referee's name that called that foul on you?
Was it Jess?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I think it was Jess Kersey.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Antonio, it's okay. I've talked to him since,
so it's all good. I'm telling you, I've gone through the whole psychological thing. I fixed it, so I'm good.
Hey, we're going to let that rest and still try and, you know, move forward. It's tough, but favorite player to watch in today's game? I know you mentioned to watch too much, but you got to have a favorite.
Yeah, you know, you know what? I'm still trying to adjust to big guys being out on the three-point line.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you know what I'm saying? I'm still not adjusting to that. But I am amazed with Anthony Davis.
Another AD?
Yeah, you know, and the reason, let me tell you why. So he'll go on one end and he'll guard a big guy. It seems like he takes defense seriously, rebounding seriously, protecting the rim seriously, right? That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other end, man, he's making plays. And I know you know the story behind him. He started as a little, you know, little bitty point guard, 6'2", you know what I'm saying? Real lanky and skinny. Next thing you know, he's 6'10", 6'11". And he still kind of got some of that same skill set. This game is perfect for him today. So every time I'm watching him, man, I'm amazed at just how he is on both ends of the floor, you know. And with the Pacers, Miles, man. Miles Turner, I was watching something the other day, and he's leading the league in blocks.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome, man. Like I'm amazed at that in today's game because it seemed like so many players run away from the rim when somebody's coming down the middle. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like back in the day, we felt like that was our job. Okay, dunk on me, but my job is to stop you from putting a ball in the basket. So if you happen to get one by me, it's okay. Where now it's like nobody wants to be in the highlights. Nobody wants to be on social media. So they're trying to move out of the way. You know what I'm saying?
Big time.
So to have him lead the league in blocks, man, is awesome.
Last question for you. Who is the GOAT in your mind?
Oh, Michael Jordan, bro. Like,
I
there's no way that I'm going to go against that. Now, I am super impressed with LeBron because over the years, this guy's played at a high level for a long period of time.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple positions. Obviously, he goes on to a team and he affects that team. So, you know, there's a lot to be said about that. But, you know, you can't go to the finals all that many times and lose. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
MJ went six times, wins six times, MVP, I don't know how many times. I mean, that's incredible. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah. You got a quick MJ story for us before we wrap up?
The crazy part, you know, when he came back and he played in Indiana that time, you know, I was like a little kid. I go back, I think somebody showed me some clips of that game, and I'm like, man, I was not there as a player that game. I was definitely there as a fan, you know.
Hey, you guys got the win?
We did get the win, but it wasn't because of Antonio.
Well, I've got a quick follow-up question because I've heard some different things. I've heard some people say that they used to see a lot of the Pacers players down at Fridays, but I'm just curious, what was the big go-to hangout place for you guys after games?
Oh my goodness. Oh man. There was a couple places that I don't even think are there anymore. There was one, was it on the east side, called the Baritz or something like that?
I'm not sure.
Little nightclub on a – I know, bro. I'm telling you. You know, the hard part for us a lot of times, and I at least I know for me, when I did decide to go out, I really just wanted to go out, listen to some good music, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
you know, and I can say it now that I'm not playing, have a drink if we didn't have, you know, a game the next day or whatever the case may be. But at the end of the day, with it being a small town, there was really nowhere you can go and not, you know, and you know, because you didn't want people to think, oh, they just hanging out. They're going to lose the next game or anything like that, right? Mm-hmm. So you were trying to sneak out, which you can. I don't know how I thought I could sneak at 6'9", but you try to just sneak out and have a good time, you know, and get back. So we were constantly finding these kind of small spots to kind of meet up and just kind of hang out that was off the beaten path. And kind of spend some time together, or, you know, with a small group of fans or teammates or friends, and not be at the most happening spot.
Right.
At least I wasn't. The guys I hung around wasn't, you know. But yeah, that's where we are now.
Awesome. The pre-social media days, and you could do anything you wanted.
Oh my God. I don't know how they do it nowadays, bro.
I don't know either.
I wouldn't be anywhere. I'd be at home.
Yep.
Awesome stuff, man. Well, we appreciate you coming on, and thanks so much for joining us, AD.
Oh, man. Good luck to you guys. You guys take care.
Pacer Nation, thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Setting the Pace. Make sure you find us on Twitter at SettingThePace3. I'm at AlexGoldenNBA. My co-host is at _FACCI. I want to thank Tony East and Antonio Davis, former Indiana Pacer, for coming on the podcast today. Facci was not able to do the exciting recording for me, so I'm going to set myself up tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow against the Los Angeles Lakers as the Pacers are battling. I'm going to be up in my living room shouting these three words.
Let's go, Pacers!
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.